One, two, three. This is Dr. Alex Avila with Love University, and we're back. I'm an author, psychologist, and speaker. Every week, we talk about how to love ourselves, others, and a higher nature, how to improve our relationships, our finances, our careers, and our spiritual and emotional health. And I'm very pleased to have a wonderful guest today, the esteemed Ariel Ford, America's top publicist. She's responsible for launching the careers of many self-help authors, Deepak Chopra, Don Miguel Ruiz, also the Chicken Soup for the Soul guys, and she actually, at age 43, met her soulmate and husband in a very interesting way and became a spiritual soulmate author. She's the author of the international bestseller, The Soulmate Secret. She's written 11 books on love and relationships and with the law of attraction. They call her the Cupid of Consciousness, the fairy godmother of love. Ariel Ford conducts worldwide workshops on love, soulmates, and relationships, and she lives with her husband and cats in La Jolla. Welcome, Ariel, to the show.
Thank you, Alex. How are you?
I'm doing great. By the way, who's a better soulmate, a dog or a cat?
Oh, probably a dog. I prefer cats, but dogs are easier because they're always looking for love and wanting to give love. Yes. And cats, cats can be finicky.
That makes sense. Yeah, unconditional love, right? Which we're going to talk about as a definition.
Yeah.
Now, you have an interesting journey. Uh-huh. You went from a publicist to a lot of top authors to a love relationship teacher and coach. And I was reading you have a very interesting love story. You apparently went to a hugging saint, and then you started having a dream, and then your future soulmate had a dream about you. Tell us a little bit about how did that happen? How did you meet that soulmate?
Well, it was actually a very long process.
Yes.
So what I was up to, I've been studying the law of attraction for over 30 years.
Yes.
And one morning when I was 43, I woke up and realized I had forgotten to get married. So I decided to use every law of attraction prayer process and ritual
yes.
that I had ever used to create my business to manifest a soulmate.
Yes.
And part of that journey was getting a hug from the Indian saint Amma.
Ah.
And on the night that I got the hug from her, I had a dream.
Yes.
And in the dream, I was given clues about my future soulmate.
Yes.
And at the same time, he started seeing my face in his dreams, even though we'd never met.
Wow.
So it was quite a magical, mystical process.
Amazing. I think he said something like, after Beth comes Ariel, and he had a girlfriend named Beth at the time. Or Elizabeth, I think.
Yes, he was actually just leaving a relationship with a woman named Elizabeth.
Wow.
And one of the clues in the dream I had was that I would come after someone named Beth.
That's
so, I said, it was pretty magical.
Yeah, that's incredible. Now, you talk about soulmates and the big love, and you define soulmates, I believe, as a deep connection, unconditional love, and also feeling home with that person. And you also
yes.
say that soulmates can be it could be a friend, it could be a love, romantic partner, it could be a family member, or even a pet. But the idea, Ariel, of unconditional love is very interesting because I teach psychology and I always ask my classmates, do you have an agapic relationship with your love partner? And some people say yes, but other people say, well, no, if he cheats on me, or then I'm not going to have that unconditional love. Now, with children, it's different. With parents, with children, they have unconditional love. No matter what the child does, the parent still has that love. Is that possible with romantic partnerships, or is it challenging?
So what my belief is that for most people, it's really hard to stop loving someone, no matter what horrible thing they
yes.
may do. There's always a piece of you that still loves them.
Right.
Now, you may choose to be sane and connect from that person because
yes.
they don't, you know, it's not good for you.
Right.
But I think one of the biggest problems people have is, you know, they meet somebody, they think they're their soulmate, they fall in love, they get married, they have children, and then 20 years later it's over.
Yes.
And then they make the whole thing wrong. Oh, he wasn't my soulmate. She wasn't
right.
my soulmate. The truth is, some soulmate relationships come with an expiration date.
Uh-huh.
So just because it didn't last your entire lifetime doesn't mean weren't meant to be with them. And it doesn't mean that you have to stop loving them.
Ah.
You know, it just means that for whatever reason, like, you know, it's over. There's more soulmates out there. We all have lots of opportunities for soulmate relationships. This
yeah.
myth that we each only get one big love in a lifetime is just a big fat lie.
Interesting. Now, the other thing that's interesting, Ariel, is you have a love soulmate quiz. And people ask themselves, for example, do you believe your soulmate is out there? Do you have space for the soulmate? And do you believe that you can live without having a soulmate. And that's interesting because it's possible, let's say someone says to you, you know, I'm following the path of brahmacharya, for example, spiritual celibacy, or I have, you know, grandchildren, I don't want a love partner. Are there some people that don't need soulmates? Or does everyone need a soulmate?
Sure, plenty of them. I think, in this day and age, having a soulmate is just a desire. It's a choice. Yes. Nobody needs to have a partner, you know. So it's just a choice that we make. And what I think people need to do is understand that we live in an abundant universe. Yes. There's more than enough love and enough potential partners for all of us. Yes. And the thing that will magnetize somebody to us is our belief system. So if you have a belief, I'm too old, I'm too fat, I'm too damaged, all the good ones are taken, yes, the one that was got away, I live in the wrong city. If you hold on to those beliefs as if they're true, which they are not, but if you hold on to them, you will make yourself right and you will die alone. So the biggest obstacle I come across with people is their own limiting beliefs. You know, they live in a constant self-pity party of, yes, oh, poor me, if only then I could have someone to love. And yeah, it's absolutely not true. That's like saying, oh, poor me. If only I lived in the right city, I could have fresh air to breathe. Or, yes, or if only I didn't live in the Western world, I could have clean water. There's more than enough for all of us if you're living in the Western world.
Exactly. I think Don Miguel Ruiz talks about the stories we tell ourselves and mitote, kind of like some kind of fantasy world. But the other thing I like about what you do is you talk about something called feelingization, which is kind of a combination, mm-hmm, of visualization and emotional anchors. So you say that basically, right, you meditate, you put candles and music, and then you kind of feel deeply the love you have for your soulmate to be, and also you express it to the world, kind of like loving kindness meditation. How does that work?
Yes, because, okay, so let's talk about what doesn't work. So visualizations don't work. Mm. The reason they don't work is because they're pretty pictures that occur in your head. For instance, let's say you want a brand new blue convertible BMW. And inside your head, whatever color, right? Yes. Okay. You see yourself driving down the road, yes, the top's down, you can smell the leather, you can, right, feel the steering wheel. You're in this sort of blissful mental state. Oh, my perfect car.
Yes.
Simultaneously, your physical emotional reaction is, I can't afford it. I'm never going to get it. I don't deserve it,
yes,
which cancels out all the pretty pictures. Mm. So with a feelingization, it's a guided process that I give away free. Lots of them are free on my, yes, website,
sure,
where I take you from your head down into your heart, mm-hmm, and we drop into a state known as heart coherence, mm, where we re-experience feelings of love, appreciation, and gratitude. Mm. And this is actually a measurable state. It's a scientifically proven measurable state.
Yes.
And when you're in heart coherence, when you're re-experiencing a moment of love or gratitude,
yes,
you're in this different frequency, which makes you magnetic to more of that which you desire.
Oh.
So if your desire is for a loving long-term partnership,
yes,
you first have gratitude for all the love you already have, friends, family, dogs, cats, whatever. Mm. And then you start to use your imagination. Wouldn't it be lovely if today my soulmate walked into my life and we could share a life together?
Yes.
So if anybody wants to do these free processes, mm-hmm, my website is soulmatesecret.com, soulmatesecret.com.
Yes.
There's a button called free stuff.
Ah,
just go to free stuff. You can get them all for free.
Oh, that's pretty good. Yeah, like I work with trauma victims and they have associations of the trauma, you know, like in the body. It's called the pain body. And then people are triggered. So this is like a reversal. So you trigger positive emotions by associating certain things in your body.
Right.
And also their soulmate. The other thing is you talk about preparation a lot. Preparation, preparing the mind, your house for the soulmate, cleaning out the negative energies, your exes. I think you even say there's some kind of energetic hook that an ex can have in you. So what does that mean?
There's a couple of things. So if you say that manifesting a soulmate life partner is your number one priority,
yes,
then you need to prepare on all levels. And when you're preparing your home, or what I like to call feathering the nest, the first step is getting rid of clutter,
yes,
and clearing out negative energy from past relationships.
Right.
And there are simple ways to do it. We all know how to clear clutter. We just have to do it.
Yes.
And then if you want to get rid of the negative energy, you can use the Native American technique of smudging. You can hire a professional energy worker.
Right.
Or you could simply open all your doors and windows on a sunny day, take a broom, and with your imagination, sweep out the old energy.
Interesting. So what is smudging? That sounds like, are you putting something on something, the smudge?
The smudging process is you get white sage, a bundle of white sage, which you can get really at Whole Foods, just about anywhere. You put it on a plate, you light it till it begins to smoke, and then you take the smoking sage and you just put it over all the windows and the door jams and in the closets, because this is how the Native Americans dissipate negative energy.
Interesting. Now, the other thing you talk about exes and like maybe changing a bed sheet or the ex may have been on, or visualizing the ex as a bubble, and then you pop the bubbles. So you have a lot of interesting ideas.
There's a lot of techniques for what I like to call cutting the cords with your past.
Yes.
Because when you've been sexually intimate with somebody, you leave your energetic cords on them and vice versa.
Yes.
So even if you've been broken up for many, many years, you're still on the unseen plane energetically connected to them.
Yes.
So cutting the cords is a great way to do it. You can take a salt bath, which means either going into the salty ocean or filling a bathtub with a large amount of sea salt. Or you can, there are processes where you can work with energetic healers to cut cords. You can use your imagination. But what you want to do is let go of them on all levels so that you're open, willing, and available for new love to come in.
That makes sense. And the other thing is bringing in the positive. You talk about things like love before first sight. And you said there was a man that was invited to a wedding party, and then he put plus one, even though he didn't have anyone, but he visualized that he was with his soulmate, and then he met the soulmate eventually. Things like that,
yes.
treasure mapping, I guess, like a vision board of your soulmate and things like that. So how important is that to kind of like start to believe that you have the soulmate, even in the moment?
Well, all of it's useful, you know, because you're constantly sending out message to the universe that you know and trust that the one you've asked for is already yours and is on the way.
Yes.
So what the man was doing with the RSVP card for the wedding was he was living as if. He was knowing and trusting that by the time the wedding came around, he would have a date for it.
Yes.
So you do that by, it's a positive moment to do something like that. Or you might want to buy concert or tickets or tickets to a play for the future.
Right.
And if that day rolls around and the soulmate's not there, you take a friend.
Yes.
So you're doing all these proactive things that say to the universe, I'm not only ready, I trust that somebody is coming.
That makes sense. And I also like the fact you say savoring the waiting, because many times people get impatient, they get frustrated, I don't have a soulmate. So you said visualize 5 years with your soulmate, and they even go back before you had your soulmate, and you were happy then in terms of who you are. That's important apparently as well, right? To be able to say, I'm happy
at
the moment.
Think about when you know you're going out for a good meal, you know, and you're going to your favorite restaurant for your favorite dish. You know, you might think about it several times during the day. Oh, I'm really excited. I'm anticipating something really wonderful.
Yes.
Well, when you've placed your order with the universe for your soulmate to arrive, start to live in that feeling of excitement and anticipation as opposed to checking your watch saying, where are you? You're late. Because this is on God's timing, not ours. You know, so we want to savor your last days as a single person. What can you do with this time that you have that you may not have time for later? Because as we know, finding the soulmate is the super easy part. Learning to live with them and nurture the relationship is where all the hard work is. So when I say savor the waiting, like really enjoy the lack of stress that you have as a single person.
That makes sense. Living in the now, you know, enjoying what you have. And the
other
thing that's interesting, you talk about receiving, and you know, a lot of the spiritual law of attraction authors talk about that some people are not able to receive the good, and there they block it. And you say that many times people have a very definite person they're looking for, and they kind of close the channel. For example, I want tall, dark, and handsome, or one certain kind of personality. And you say be friends with everybody. Like, you know, some people might be a good comedy friend or a bowling friend, and then open the channels for that. That's important.
Yes,
to do that.
Because what you really where you want to get to is to uncover what is your soul most calling for in a mate. Yeah. So honestly, height, weight, income level, the color of their shoes is not going to make one bit of difference in your happiness level.
Yes.
What is it your soul is calling for? You know, do you need somebody? Are you somebody who wants a lot of love and time, attention, affection?
Yes.
Or are you somebody who's pretty happy by yourself most of the time and you just want to see them one night a week and on weekends? You know, you have to know this about yourself to call in the right person who's the right fit for you.
Exactly. I believe your husband is it Brian, your husband?
Yes.
Yes. Now, you're saying that before you're choosing men who are very high-powered men. I wrote a book called The Love Types based on Myers-Briggs personality type. You know, for example, the intuitive thinker is a knowledge-seeking, competent, powerful person. But you said they didn't really have time for you, maybe affection. And I'm wondering, is Brian a meaning seeker? Is he in a more emotional character?
You know what? What's really great? I don't know what he is in Myers-Briggs. I forgot what I am.
Okay.
But what I do know is he is a he was a captain of the universe type.
Was he? Oh.
Up until the time I met him, and then
yes,
he had had a near-death experience.
Oh.
And changed.
Oh. Okay.
And even along the way, what I needed most was somebody who was really generous with their heart, generous with their love and attention and affection.
Right.
And he is all of that. I am a better person because I'm with him. But also because I recognize that the guys that I was attracted to weren't even my wish list. It was my mother's wish list, you know. So I ended up really with a hybrid that is a perfect fit for me.
Well, your face lit up. I saw that you smiled and, you know, you felt the love. I saw the love in your face when you talked about him. You told me that he also wants to give love to others. That's one of his important things in life. When he meets people,
he actually believes his purpose in life is to make sure that everybody he meets or interacts with has the experience of being loved. That's why he's on the planet. So I get the bulk of that because I'm the one he sees the most.
But he's
still true to his mission.
Where is Brian? Is he out with the cats today? Are we able to see him, or is he?
No, he's upstairs, just hanging out right now.
Okay. The other thing I realize is I wonder if you kind of had an evolution of thought in terms of the way you look at something. Because I read in your book, you talked about loving yourself as very important. And you said that there's a best self that you can visualize, and that best self says good things about you, and then also tells you what you need to eliminate so you can fall deeper in love with yourself. Originally, I heard in an interview.
All right,
said,
so I want to clarify something here. So one of the things that makes me crazy these days is all the people who are capitalizing and making a lot of money on the self-love movement. Like you have to really love yourself first before anyone else will love you.
Right.
And I think it's complete bullshit, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
The fastest way to wholeness and healing that exists on this planet is to be with your soulmate and see how much love they have for you. Because when you can see how much somebody else loves you, you heal and you love yourself more.
Yes.
So if you're sitting around saying, well, I can't date because I don't love myself enough yet.
Yes.
That's just an excuse not to put yourself out there.
Exactly.
So the truth is, yes, we could all do more self-love, self-care, self-nurturing.
Yes.
The only caveat I have is if you're a person who has true self-loathing, then you need to see someone like you. Then you need professional therapy to get past the self-loathing.
Right.
But 99% of most human beings have self-doubt about themselves, have a critical voice in their head, and you are going to die with that critical voice.
Right.
The only thing you can do is have spiritual tools to mitigate the voice.
Yes.
You know, when the voice pops up for me, rather than ignore it or feel bad about myself, I have a little process I do. I become aware. I notice the voice.
Right.
And I say to it, thank you for sharing. That's not true. Cancel. And then I give myself a positive affirmation of what is true.
Yes.
And if that doesn't work, then I'll do some EFT tapping around it.
Mm.
And then I'll go and stand in front of the mirror and blow myself a kiss. So really, happiness is really your own responsibility. There's nobody else out there that's going to make you happy.
Right.
And you have to become an emotionally mature adult and not let yourself swing down into the bottom of the pit every time you have a negative thought. Because you're going to have negative thoughts for the rest of your life. The question is, how are you going to deal with them?
Yeah, that makes sense. And I was going to say that the idea that someone can love you unconditionally can actually help transform you into the person you want to be. And the idea is
right.
That,
and when I say unconditional, I don't mean they're going to approve of all of your behavior,
right,
or they're going to let you get away with all your shit. That's not going to happen.
Right.
Unconditional means, hey, I am all in with you.
Right.
Things will have good days and bad days. Nobody's leaving on the bad days.
Right.
I understand you're just a normal wounded being. I'm a normal wounded being. You're not perfect. I'm not perfect, but we're perfect for each other.
That makes sense. Yeah, I mean, recognizing the human frailties, you know, we're not perfect, because if you spend all your time trying to be perfect before you find someone, you may never go out and do it. So the key is action. Also, you talk a lot about gratitude, and I wrote a book called The Three Secrets of Happiness, in which a mystic monk meets a pompous psychiatrist, and the three secrets, one of which is gratitude, and the idea is that you're grateful for all the good that comes from another source. It could be a higher power, it could be a friend, or even a stranger. So, and they show that gratitude journals, people that do that, you know, write three things you're grateful for every day, have 30% less depression, 40% better sleep. And you talk a lot about gratitude as well. How does that work in terms of soulmates?
Well, I think Dr. John Gottman has the best solution to that. I'm sure you know who he is, but for other people who don't, he's the world's leading researcher on relationships and marriage. He's totally a genius.
Yes.
And he says that you should give your spouse five appreciations and acknowledgments every day.
Right.
Now, why do you want to do this? Mm-hmm. A, it requires that you pay attention to them.
Yes.
B, you're looking for what's right instead of looking for what's wrong.
Right.
And C, they're going to like you and love you a whole lot more if you're acknowledging the good things that they do. And you don't have to ask them to do it for you. Once you start that as a program, they will spontaneously want to reciprocate.
Exactly. Well, it's also called the Losada ratio. Even in work, you know, five positives for one negative is a good ratio.
Yes.
So, because if most people do opposite, do four or five negatives for one positive, then they get overwhelmed. And the other thing is, Ariel, you talk about spiritual people may have a difficult time finding a soulmate. And we talk about intuition. You said that people are very intuitive, make very quick judgments, you know, like intuitively, I don't like this person. And you say it takes about five dates to really get to know a person. So what do you tell spiritual folks that they go by their intuition?
It's different for men and women. So men are very visual and sometimes will know instantly whether or not that's their woman. Most women will never know until like the fifth date, because women fall in love between their ears.
Yes.
So they might like the way you look, they might like your car, but until they feel a level of safety and security emotionally and physically with you, they're not going to go down that path unless they have a bad boy pattern. So women, especially spiritual women, have the hardest time, I find, in finding love for two reasons. The first is they tend to be really judgmental. People are going on a spiritual path because they have a lot of pain and they're looking for ways to heal their pain.
Yes.
So they're attracted to personal growth work. And the person they're most judgmental of is themselves.
Yes.
And then they become judgmental of everybody else. So they open the door, there's some guy standing there, and in 20 seconds they've decided, no, you're not it. But they know nothing about him.
Right.
So when I'm coaching women, I tell them, your only job on these initial dates is to look for three things on each date that you like about them. Like, imagine you had to call me at the end of the date and tell me three things that you liked. Don't try to figure out, is he the one? What don't I like about him? What isn't working? You know, unless they've just had three martinis and you can see they have an alcohol problem. If they haven't totally grossed you out, then go on a second date.
That makes sense. I mean, it's kind of the non-judgmental, almost empathetic look at things. You look at the other side. The other thing is, Ariel, there's a fine line between desiring and surrendering. Now, we had Marion Williamson on the show who, you know, The Course in Miracles talks about surrendering your desire for relationship, you know, to a higher sense or higher power and letting that happen. But you also have your treasure maps and your list and other things, and also action.
Okay, so this, so what you're talking about, I can't talk about it in Course in Miracle terms, but in Law of Attraction terms, it's the paradox of the law of attraction. So on the one hand, you need to be in action, which means you don't sit home on the couch waiting for your soulmate to knock on the door.
Right.
You have all your tools and you use them, whether it's online dating, going to meetups, using your treasure board, doing the feelingizations, all of that. So there's the action. On the other hand, you need to be surrendered, which is different. When you're surrendered, you're saying to the universe, I know and trust the one I've asked for is on the way. So you're not like, you know, pounding on the door every day going, where are you? Where are you? Where are you? You're doing what you need to do. You're putting feet to your prayers. Yes. And you're also saying to God in the universe, I know and trust that this person is out there. This is why I created this one feelingization called the golden cord, because what it allows you to do is have love before first sight. And this is how it works. As we know in quantum physics, I'm not making this up, in the quantum physics, we know a couple of things. One, there is no time. There is just this now moment. There's no past. There's no future. There is this now moment. Right. The other thing that we know is that we all exist in a field. And in this field, we are all connected to everything and everybody. So in this now moment, in the field, on the unseen plane, you are already connected to your soulmate. Yes. Now, you don't know their name. You don't know the day and time you're going to meet them in the 3D world. Right. But you can start the relationship with them right now today. So with the golden cord feelingization, I take you through an 8-minute closed eye guided process to meet your soulmate.
Interesting. Wow. That's pretty interesting. Now, let's say that we have our soulmate, Ariel. You've been married for a period of time. What if you
22.
How many years? 26?
22.
Oh, 22. Okay.
22.
So it's coming up pretty soon. So how about conflicts? I mean, you know, like in the Myers-Briggs and personality typing, people maybe introvert versus extrovert, thinker versus figure, you know, so there can be issues that come up as a result. What's your tips for people to handle those differences in personality styles or whatever it might be in a long-term marriage?
You know, it's for me, it's not about personality styles. Conflicts will come up. That's a given. Yes. Gottman's work has proven that every single couple has a minimum of 9 irreconcilable differences. These are things you're never, ever going to agree on. The number one being money.
Yes.
Number one being money, number one cause of divorce, money.
Wow.
Now, why is that? Because generally, one person's a saver, one's a spender.
Yes.
You grew up with different ideas about money. Money's a conflict. So early on, before you take sacred vows, you need to have a creative solution to how you're going to handle money.
Yes.
You know, and you have to really talk about it. It doesn't have to be compromised necessarily. Mm-hmm. You have to create something that works for everybody. Brian and I did this because he's a spender. I'm the saver. Uh-huh. He grew up in a wealthy home. I grew up in a poor home. Uh-huh. You know, we had very different ways. And it wasn't that we both came into the marriage with money and good careers.
Yes.
It wasn't a lack of money. It was how the money was used. So what ended up working for us is that we have 3 accounts. There's my money, there's his money, we don't police each other, and then there's the joint account, and nobody spends any money from the joint account without permission from the other.
Very good.
And that alleviated all the money problems.
Yes.
But we had to talk about it. And we had, it was especially hard for me because I was unaware of my poverty consciousness.
Uh-huh.
I just grew up with it. I didn't even know that that was the source of my discomfort with how he spent, let's say, $75 on a bottle of wine. Like I said, it wasn't that we couldn't afford it. It just seemed extravagant to me.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's going to happen. You know, it could be religion, sex, children, you know, different things.
It will be all of those things.
Values, right? People's values.
Yeah.
But is the key to compromise or community? You know, what's the key? Look at the other side.
Key is kindness.
Yes.
And respect and a willingness to always acknowledge you're on the same team and to find the win-win solution that works for everybody.
Yes.
And that takes thoughtfulness and thinking and not looking at your smartphone while your partner's trying to talk to you.
Yes.
It requires attention. And that's the thing that's really missing these days for people. Another thing that Gottman talks about that I really like is he talks about how critical it is when your partner wants to talk to you, that you actually turn and face them.
To engage them.
And speak, and you look into their eyes. He calls it bidding.
Yes.
You know, he's the one who can predict divorce within observing a couple for 15 minutes based on how they interact with each other. Because even if you're driving each other crazy, all you have to do is turn to them, hold their hand, and say, I know how much you love me, and you should know how much I love you. And we're going to work this out. which is so much better than pointing a finger saying you always and you never and right. blah, blah, you know,
contempt. Yeah.
Which gets nowhere.
Exactly. He calls them softeners also, like sense of humor, you know, things like that, little jokes that you have within yourself can break the tension.
Yeah. I wrote a book called Turn Your Mate into Your Soulmate, which is based on 200 hours of one-on-one interviews that I did with every single one of the top love and marriage and researchers out there, and then pulled out everything I've ever used that worked and turned it into a 16-step program called Turn Your Mate into Your Soulmate.
That sounds pretty cool. So you kind of incorporate all the different knowledges about that.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, Ariel, this is, I guess, a little sad, or maybe it's bittersweet. But you love someone, and then one of you dies. Now, you wrote a book on the other side, which is, does romantic
and
love last?
And they both die. Yes.
Say it again. Okay. So does romantic love last beyond life? And then you have the widow of Richard Carson, the famous psychologist, and she writes beautiful stuff about, she sees angels that remind him of her, and he's paving the way, you know, for her to heaven and that kind of stuff. So what do you see?
And I just saw her recently, and she has met her new soulmate 10 years after Richard's death.
She did. Okay.
I mean, my belief and understanding is that love never dies.
Yes.
And that even though the physical body may be gone, the love and heart connection is still there.
Yes.
And that if you are the widow or the widower left here on earth and you desire a new partner, you ask your partner on the other side to assist you in manifesting them. So this book, Love on the Other Side, I give it away for free. Oh. It's at loveontheotherside.com, and it shows you how to do that.
That's beautiful. And also, your sister passed away a few years ago. You said she never found a soulmate on Earth, but she wanted one in another life. Did she find one?
Yes, she did. She's on the other side with her twin flame, and she said in their next incarnation, they will both come into physical body together because this last lifetime of hers, he stayed on the other side to be her guardian angel.
Wow, that's beautiful. And then the widow of Carson, Christine, says, I am you and you are me. We remain connected throughout eternity. I thought that was very touching. Beautiful kind of stuff.
Well, I think it goes back to understanding about the field where we're all connected to everything and everybody. We're all drops of the same ocean.
Definitely.
It appears as though we're separate, but we know that we really are not, because just like when you walk into a room where two people have been fighting and nobody's speaking, but you can feel energetically the tension in the air, that's because we're all connected. We just have on different, you know, human skins.
Are you an empath or a highly sensitive person?
I am a highly sensitive person in that loud noises and bright lights and crowds
are
very irritating to me.
Yes.
And in terms of being empathic to other people's pain, I've done a really good job of putting up my psychic shield and not taking it off too much.
I see. But naturally, you now, in terms of personal life, is there anything you've overcome in your life? Any obstacles that you've transformed for better? Any fears or obstacles that you've overcome that you can?
I would say that the biggest ones have been around poverty consciousness and anxiety around never, you know, like not having enough.
Even though you were successful financially, weren't you, with all the publicist stuff you did?
But it's not about money. Poverty consciousness has nothing to do with money. I could have $30 million in the bank, and that would not cure it, because it's just everybody comes with a core wound or two that is like a hole in your soul.
Right.
So what I tell people is you will die with your core wounds. Mm-hmm. The question is, will you have done enough work to mitigate the problems most of the time? So I still get triggered from time to time where I have some contraction around money.
Yes.
And what I do now is, A, I know it's not going to last long. B, I'll do some tapping around it. Yes. And if it gets really bad, I pull out my retirement account and look at the numbers and say, see, you're never going to starve. But part of it isn't just the way I was brought up in a home like that. I'm Jewish, so part of it's in my DNA. Right. And my grandmother lived with us, and all I heard was stories about how she starved during the Depression.
Right. Okay.
So it's generational as well as, you know, the home that the container I was cooked in.
Right.
But I have a lot of compassion for that part of myself now. And so it doesn't drive my life the way it once did.
That makes sense. You know, in the book Invincible Blue I wrote, I talk about loving money energy. So money if you do something you love, is a form of energy coming to you, and you buy goods and services in appreciation for other people's contribution. So it's kind of a way to share love, if you think of it in that way. So I think that's more of a prosperity way of looking at it. Now, what would be a tweet to the world you would do? Let's say you have one tweet, and this is your last tweet that you're ever going to do. What would that be?
Oh, that's a good one. Let me pull something up, because I actually tweeted it yesterday.
Did you?
But I have a bad memory. Not my last tweet ever, but a favorite tweet. Let me see if I can get my hands on it. Hang on one second. Yes. Okay. Here it is. You ready?
Yes.
The problem isn't that you have negative thoughts. The problem is that you believe those thoughts and do nothing to cancel them out and replace them. Mind your mind.
Very nice. Did you come up with that or no?
I did.
Oh, okay. That's pretty good. Yeah. It's kind of transforming the thoughts and doing something with them, right? In a positive way. That's like that.
Yeah.
And in terms of what are you excited about most? I mean, you've done a lot of wonderful things. I know you do coaching and books and you help a lot of people. Is there anything on the horizon that you're excited about?
Yes, I'm 90% through writing my first novel, which will also become a movie at some point.
Oh,
so that's
incredible.
That's the most exciting thing going on right now.
Right. Did you work with the Secret author by any chance, or do you know her?
No, okay. I'm not a big fan of the Secret, and here's why.
Okay.
The Secret left out the secret sauce, which is the feeling part, the emotional part.
Yes.
If you truly want to manifest, you need to do it from a heart-based feeling place. Because as I said, having all the pretty vision boards and all the visualizations in your head will not bring you something if you don't believe that you deserve it. And I think the reason why so many people said, oh, well, I watched it, I read the book, it didn't work for me. Mm-hmm. It didn't work for them because they left out the most important component.
The feeling part. What if somebody is a thinker personality and they're not really in tune to their feelings? Is that still going to work for them, the feeling part?
Yeah, everybody has feelings. You just have to train yourself to remember them, because that's what it's about. If you have your attention focused on your heart and you want to feel gratitude, then call up a memory. Oh, somebody handed me my favorite cookie yesterday. I'm so grateful to them. Right. And just have you focus on, what does gratitude feel like? So you can be trained, just like you can be trained to be a good meditator.
Yes.
You can be trained to be a good feeler.
That makes sense. How about in terms of a superhero or heroines? Is there anyone? I mean, it could be someone in history or even a comic book, I guess. Do you have anyone?
Well, my current superheroine is Greta Thunberg, the 16-year-old who is the environmental climate change activist.
Oh, okay.
I'm madly in
love with
Greta.
Okay. All right. So you do have some people that you admire as superheroes, right? Okay. Well, it's been wonderful having you on the show, Ariel. Where can people hear more about your work? And, do you have coaching? What do you offer right now? Do you do seminars, too?
I'll be teaching at 1440 up in the San Jose area in February, and at Esalen in Big Sur in April. And the easiest way to find me is at my website, soulmatesecret.com. Click on free stuff. And I also send out a weekly newsletter with all kinds of love tips.
Fantastic. Well, it's been wonderful having you on the show. And Love University, our motto here is to extend loving energy without expectation. And to help eradicate loneliness, because a lot of people feel loneliness because they're disconnected from themselves, others, and a higher nature. So bringing that love in is wonderful. And, when someone dies, that's what is left, is the love that we have for that person in memories and also in the future. So Love University students, if you have any questions, you can email us at loveuniversitylove@gmail.com, 310-226-8090. Visit us at loveuniversity.love. Like us on Facebook at Love University Podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Love Letter U Podcast. Until next time, Love University students, put away your notepads, your books, your iPads, and this is Dr. Alex Avila.